this real quick.
Wow, that was loud.
That's gonna be the. I'm gonna cut that and put it in the front as the intro.
All right, perfect.
What's up, music fans? Welcome to A to B Flat, the podcast that'll smoke your eyelids and punch your cigarette. This episode, I've got round two with the always amazing Kerry Ott. We'll talk about a new album coming out soon, Shoe Game, and great guitars, among other things. I hope you enjoy, and please support the podcast by stopping by uwjmusic.com and picking up a t-shirt or record.
Cool.
All right. You ready to go?
I'm just going to eat chips.
That sounds,
no,
sounds good. That'll sound great. So we're going to record an episode of A to B Flat. And where are we? In the world.
East Nashville, Tennessee.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. And who are you?
Kerry Ott, so right. I'm told.
That's right. Your second appearance.
Yes.
On the podcast.
Yeah. The other one was a phoner.
The phoner. I'm not a fan of the phoner anymore. I don't think I'm going to do it anymore.
Yeah. There was something about having people in the room.
It was good, but not, I think I've also heard like people are more likely to listen to your podcast if it's in person.
Mm.
Like it sounds like a,
yeah,
something they'd want to do rather than Skype or on the phone.
Right. Right.
All right.
Definitely. I think it definitely makes a difference. What podcasts do you listen to? Do you listen to any notable ones?
Tim Ferriss was okay. A big one.
Yep.
That got me started in podcasts. And James Altucher is the next one.
Okay.
I'm a big, I guess, guest picker, like who they have on the podcast.
Yeah.
Especially if it's someone like I haven't heard of or has an interesting life kind of deal.
Yeah.
So
I think it's really cool. There's a real art to it, you know?
Right.
And there's a million ways to do it.
Yeah.
So it's fun.
All right. I'm going to start you off with a selfish question. Other than JJ Cale and the Tragically Hip, who should I be listening to right now?
Well, Doug Somm.
Okay.
He's a Texas guy.
From the Texas Tornadoes?
He's from in the Sir Douglas Quintet. I've been into that. That record came in with my barter. My buddy gave me a milk crate full of vinyl for some recording sessions.
There you go.
And it was like, it's all this great stuff. Doug Somm, there's like Miles Davis live at Carnegie, there's Ike and Tina. But see, I'm kind of a snob, I'm kind of an elitist, because, you know, I just think there was like a golden era.
Right.
And I don't know if we'll ever get back there. I mean, just so this is a lot of contemporary stuff, I'm just kind of like, yeah, nice try. But I just, even my own stuff, I'm like, yeah, nice try, you know. Because it's just, there was a magic. And I'm reading that Sam Phillips biography.
Right.
And there was just there was a magic that he was on the front edge, the leading edge of, that it's almost hard to read because, you know, everything was so innocent.
Right.
You know, and he was on the front of it,
right?
The very beginning of it. And
you don't think we'll get it back?
Never the same. That doesn't mean it won't eclipse it. You know,
right.
It could eclipse it, but just it won't be the same. And I guess I'm a little partial to vinyl, you know, and
right.
Just the whole process back then, the way people thought, I just think was more conducive. I feel like artistically we're in a sort of a lull. Like a, you know, maybe there's another renaissance ahead.
Right.
But we're not, I feel like we're medieval times or something. Like,
right.
You know, for art. I just feel like it's just.
When did you start to feel that way? I had a question about that, actually. But this is better podcast material.
Yeah. I've kind of always felt that way, but I don't know. I think what really it started happening once I entered the business.
Okay.
Yeah. And I got an education.
Right.
You know. And now I'm actually like coming full circle and celebrating more of the reasons why I started and getting more into that. And so literally like almost so I can do music for the same reason I do podcasting.
Right.
Just because for me, I don't want to think about the dollar
right.
while I'm doing it. Yeah, I just can't. It just, and I think artists in the 70s perhaps or 60s or in that golden era, they right. were more in that line of thinking and that they were more like singing from their heart and it was like life or death.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now it's like showbiz. Everything's right. just showbiz.
What's the value? What's it going to get me?
Right. Yeah. It's a means to an end instead of the end.
Right.
For me, it's always been the end.
That was good. The original question was when did you stop believing in Santa Claus? It's kind of the same deal.
Same. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, you can always capture that same right. spark, that same innocence. But generally, there's not going to be a lot of attorneys around and hangers-on, you know, agents and accountants.
Right.
And, I mean, nothing against those people. I'm sure they're lovely people, but they're not artists.
Right.
You know, there's just a different DNA. There's like different genetics. So I try to, for the most part, just be around that element.
Is it, so do you feel it more like if you're trying to capture the magic, if you will, is it like working?
It's like marketing the magic is the hard part.
Right.
Capturing yeah. it is no problem.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Anywhere. Like, so do you feel, is it more magical in the studio or performing live or both? Same.
I like both and for different reasons, but I want to play more live. We just made a record and it's probably the best thing I've ever done, but so it's always like daunting because, you know, the world doesn't necessarily have to agree.
Right, yeah,
so
for sure.
It's like, it's that whole conundrum of like, well, do I sit on it and wait till it's pseudo-relevant or right. do I just throw it out?
Throw it out there.
Because I'm kind of the mind that you have to do some setup and you have to...
Yeah, no, for sure.
And think days. About like your plan and what's your story. Because right. that's what a lot of they say, like when you radio people and stuff, what's his story? You know, it's not enough anymore to just be a guy that decided to make a record. That's boring. Yeah. You got to have some kind of like struggle or challenge right. or what's his story?
Persuade people to listen to yours.
Yeah, like why should I give a shit?
Right.
You know, answer that question in like one sentence.
Right.
And that's, you know,
well, today, what I'm working on. The problem is it's hard to have any longevity. Like if you release it before your story... By the time you get around telling the story, it's like a thousand new things.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. It's and then the Spotify, I guess, is like, call it the Spotify.
The Spotify. The machine. The
Loch Ness Monster. No, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's right. like Spotify is like really a big chunk of it. Like right. the action right now.
Yeah.
It's just like that's becoming almost like the business for a lot of people.
Yeah.
How can we get something to go viral
on
Spotify?
On Spotify.
And that doesn't serve the songwriters at all, but I guess the artists can make a pretty decent chunk of change from it.
Right.
Because that's what I've kind of found out more recently, is that the artist gets approximately 100 times what the songwriter gets
from really? Spotify. From Spotify.
Yeah.
But still not much.
Well, it can depends. If it's 5 million streams, then you can make 100 grand. But then the songwriter might get $500
right
on that same 5 million streams. That's so it's just,
yeah.
But I mean, I think the record label set it up that way, kind of almost like the gatekeepers or whatever.
Right.
Because for years and years and years, the songwriters were making the big royalty checks.
Right.
From radio.
That was the
and business. The artists were like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's almost like a payback.
They flipped it around.
They flipped it, yeah.
Huh.
But yeah, I just, you know, I got to be real crafty to be able to do art on my terms.
Right.
You got to be really crafty and hustle and do a lot of different jobs. And
right.
But it's worth it.
Cause yeah, I think
I can't just be a yes man and
Goat.
I have friends that are, and I just, they look dead inside. When I look them in the eye, they're just kind of like, ugh.
There's no magic.
Well, they're just, yeah, they're like someone's like lapdog, you know, and right. They can't escape that, you right. know? They just, it's not really for them anymore. It's for all of these people. And I don't know. I mean, if that's your thing and you like that, then that's great. But I just found out like that it would have to be a real specific situation for me to, you know, play the game.
Right. Like, just for the sake of.
It would have to be a way different kind of scenario.
Right. Know?
Like a really unique scenario, but yeah, I like where I am, and because I can say what I want to say, be honest.
That's really valuable.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the best mistake you've ever made?
See, that's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer. I've made so many mistakes, it's hard to pick one.
Right.
I don't know. I guess the mistakes that, you know, break your heart are just all the silly expectations and things like you get, you know, your hopes up about things and they don't pay off.
Right.
And then you just realize like I read a book recently that was really like practical and just, I was thinking like, where was this book, you know, 10 years ago?
Yeah, that's was just, weird how that works.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, that's good advice. I didn't do any of that. I took everything personal, you know, and just was way too sensitive about everything. And so I learned. I mean, it's like, you know, I kind of got thrown in the deep end of the pool. But I learned. Essentially, the stuff in the book was just like, you know, you got to learn how to, like, care about your art like more than anything, and at the same time not give a shit. Like, there has to be, it's like this weird,
right?
And you gotta like not she says you gotta not expect to make a living from it, like you right. have to have other jobs and stuff, like, which I think is really smart, because for the same reason we just talked about, like honesty, like if you're gonna have something like relevant to say, you know, from a creative point of view, you better have your bills paid.
It better, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's just like, how do you
actually be yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just so, and it's astonishing to me how little feels like real, like these right. days. Like, it just feels like they're trying to convince me that they meant that day
or something. Right, yeah, yeah.
Or they convince me that really came from somewhere authentic. I don't know. And it might have originally, but once the extra layers of production get thrown on it and there's like all these cooks in the kitchen,
right?
It's like the original vision just gets watered way down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't like that. So, yeah, I'm kind of a snob.
It sounds good for radio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the problem is like there's all these like radio programmers and attorneys and managers and stuff that are just doing too much creative.
Yeah,
they need to stay the fuck out of creative.
Right.
But they're like some of them are struggling, you know, musicians who are like angsty because they didn't get a shot right. or whatever. And so they're all in there in the mix, especially the bigger ones. I right. think they just call shots and stuff that aren't really theirs to call. But it's you follow the money and then, you know, they're the power.
In the game.
Yeah, the power structure. But they should just leave the art to the artists.
Right.
And I think that was more in the 60s and 70s. It was more like, oh, yeah, you're the artist. Go in, record. Well, yeah. Do it your way.
Did you watch
These days it's like, no, it doesn't sound right. And here's why. Let me show you the statistics. Here's the pie charts.
Right. Yeah.
And here's what Spotify's doing right now. Right. And you're just like, I want none of this.
Here's the top 50 songs on Spotify. Which does yours sound like?
Yeah. Like, it's so limiting.
Who cares?
It's so limiting. Yeah. It's like...
That's the other thing that scares me, though, about Spotify is everything's, like, matched, you know, when someone goes on there and listens to something, then you're, like, in this tube of other similar songs, and it's hard to...
Yeah, and whose tube is that?
Right, yeah, some computer...
It's computers, right, and I was just watching something on recently about advertising and how they're, you know, they're basically trying to figure out who you are...
Yeah, they know.
...just by data that you've shared.
Look for on your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you order your pizza.
And so they just go assume they know you and right. they shoot you down a tube. And you're like, is this really relevant? I'm not a technophobe or a Luddite. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Luddite.
The Luddites.
But I'm not far from
right.
I'm like Henry David Thoreau. You know, yeah. Ideally, I would just live in a little shack in the wilderness. Right. Probably, that's probably where I'll end up with a couple guitars and a four track or something.
Right. Yeah.
But I'll have Wi-Fi and I'll just shoot out like
shoot content, it out from there.
You know, like
or you could go into town and
get my firewood.
Yeah, send out your four track.
Yeah, exactly. Cassettes. Yeah, yeah. I just only do a cassette release cassettes.
It'd be worth a lot of bitcoins.
Yeah, that might be the future.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of how I wanted to phrase this, given our conversation, but like in performing something live, is there like a song or like a line that you're like particularly connected to that's like more emotional than others? Or are they all about the same? You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I originally had is there one that's like hard to sing?
Oh, just from an emotional standpoint?
Yeah.
Or not really.
No.
No. There's the song Stars that I have I've sang it at a funeral and I've sang it at a wedding.
Uh-huh.
And it works
in both places.
I
mean, that's cool, though, because it can mean, like, different things, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe the same.
But thing, that just... made what your question made me think of, like, definitely when I was singing it at the funeral for my grandma, I was like, whoa, was... Because then, it wasn't just... It's the context that
right.
I was in.
My
family's, like,
right over there.
Struggling. And
then
I'm, like, trying to hold it together. But, yeah, I think, it has to do with the context.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if I'm in a room, like, if I'm playing the Bluebird or something and... You know, just kind of things line up and I'm playing this song and it feels like the right time. And there's, you know what I mean? There's just like a magic to it. There's
right.
a vibe. And then it like, yeah, it hits you.
Then it hits you, yeah.
But it's like all about the people in the room. Yeah. More,
the atmosphere is important.
The atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because you feel it kind of That's connect.
Cool. How often do you get that?
The Bluebird's good for that. You know, they don't pay you anything generally. But they're good. It's good for that. Getting a bunch of really... attentive people who really are listening and really care. And
not just Saturday night beer drinkers.
Right. No, everyone's really tuned in. So that's cool. So that's kind of my pay when I play there. It's just because it feels good. I've probably played there like four times in the last like 6 months or 8 months. And like, it's been pretty good. I've had a lot of those moments there where you're just like, you have people and they're like singing along like before the end of the song. Like they've never heard it before. That's kind of cool.
Right.
That's the, when you write simple hokey choruses, I guess it's easy for people to just like, oh yeah, I can do that. I've been trying to write more accessible commercial stuff, but that still has my like penchant for depth and scratching beneath the surface. It's kind of my life's work in a lot of ways, just trying to make that hybrid
solve
so it has the depth
the equation,
there if you need it, but you don't have to go there.
You don't have to
you can just stay on the surface and just enjoy it, go come in and go out, but I think this new record, there's a lot of those kind of songs on it. Oh, to go back, I don't know if I answered your question effectively. You said something like, what was your best mistake?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really answer that. I would say it's probably making a record with my dad.
Okay.
Because he's like funding this record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, he calls it a loan. But,
okay.
We'll see. See if Spotify pays him back.
Pays him back, yeah. He needs those 5 million streams.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it could happen. See, the interesting thing is he's a gambler. So
okay.
I'm like, hey, you want to gamble?
No.
I got to gamble for you. Invest in the music business.
Right.
Invest in your son. Funny thing is, I didn't approach him at all. You know, we went to a Tom Petty concert and he was all into it. He's like, wow, you know a lot of Tom Petty songs. Because he'd be like, what's this? I'd be like, Free Falling. What's this? And then it was cool, you know, it was like we bonded, which is kind of rare, you know, we're just so different. But it was actually like a cool thing because I was reading a biography about Tom Petty at the same time, and he had a weird relationship with his dad.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like a struggle. But yeah, we had a good time, and then like a week later, he's like, oh, I gamble away like 15 grand a year on poker machines. He's like, maybe I'll throw some money down for my son. I was like, sure. So we did. So then after that, like the universe just started dropping all these opportunities down. Like, oh, here's a great band. Here's a, you know, Blackbird Studio for like a really good rate, like working with the Academy. So it was like a teaching thing.
Right.
So it was like, we got 3.5 days for $500.
Wow.
And we got Bobby Hollins producing it. And so he's going to get paid per track, you know, for mixing it and for recording the whole thing and everything. But we did like 8 songs in 3.5 days. And then we went into Bobby's studio and did another 6 songs. And so, yeah, 14 songs. It's done. It's just being mixed right now. But, yeah, having my dad along, that's the best mistake. Yeah, because, you know, he's kind of a... He's very assertive. He's a little type A,
right?
You know? So having him around, sometimes you're like, okay, relax, relax, because he'll be like, you're gonna redo that vocal, right? You're gonna redo that. Yeah, that was a scratch vocal, and then you gotta educate him, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like when it's your dad, it's a little, you know, it's like the patience isn't there. You're like, just shut up. But no, it's been good. It's been pretty cool. I think my brother's jealous. But he doesn't know. He wasn't there. Yeah. You know?
That's awesome. When's it supposed to be done?
There's, I think, 6 of them are mixed. Probably the next 8 will be in the next month, I'd say.
Okay.
And then mastering.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, January, February, it should be done. But then I'm trying to decide if I want to call it a band name, just do something totally new.
Right.
Just have a band name and just have the record be called the band name.
Yeah.
And just throw it out there and... Because then I think it'll... The thing with these days is, like, new is so important.
Yeah,
like, carry out, it's not new. So no one, you know, no one really cares. Like, I don't even care. I'm over carry out. Like, I want to try something...
Try
like,
something new.
Yeah, and plus, it's a band. It really is. It's a band, 4 guys. You know, well, 5 with the keyboard, studio keyboard guy we got. But yeah, it's a band.
Everyone had a lot.
Everyone had their thing. I didn't tell them what to play at all. Like, it was very... I wrote the songs, but I didn't, like... They're all like contributing.
Right.
And so it's not really a carry out record, really. So I got a couple ideas, but you know, it's like coming up with something that's kind of relevant and kind of, I like a little provocative.
Yeah.
I want something that's like, you know, it's relevant. It makes people think. It's not just like another singer songwriter releasing a record. It's like, who cares? This is actually, you know, I want to say something like relevant.
What's the album art going to be like?
Well, I have a friend that's done some of my other stuff, and he works with like found objects and what do they call that when you collage?
Yeah.
But he does them so they're almost like 3D, like they're coming off the canvas and stuff, paint, and he finds like old books and just we're talking about having him use like guitar cables and wires and, you know, really coming up with something that's like, you know, like he'll do a big, you know, 3 feet by 3 feet thing and then take a high def picture of it. And it kind of has this 3D effect,
that's cool.
But he's really good. Yeah. He does a lot of magazines and, you know, like, Washington Post and Chicago Tribune and, New Yorker and things like that. He does covers and stuff. he does a lot of portraits, like, he's done like Elvis and Donald Trump and
cool.
But he uses found, like, you know, little pieces of dollar bills and you know, it's pretty interesting. But yeah, I wanna somehow tie that all together. I think all that stuff's important, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Just like really think about it.
I think it's so easy now for it not to be that when someone takes the time, like,
yeah, because it all goes down to like I said before, it's like, what's the story? What's this guy's story? You know, and I found out the hard way that if you don't do that, then your album just disappears.
Right.
No one cares.
Washed away.
Kind of because you didn't care that much. It's like, so how much did you put in?
Right.
And that's generally what you get out, you know? So we put a lot of money and a lot of time and effort. But now that I'm 41 and I've been around, it's not my first rodeo. I actually, during the recording, was like, well, this is as good as it gets.
This,
you know, like, this was my fun.
Right.
Like, in other words, like, yeah, I'm not results driven.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, I'd love it if it, you know, caught on and went viral or something. That'd be great. Right. It'd be fun. But I'm just more of a realist.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an artist. This is what I just do. I love it.
Do the best you.
Yeah. And just enjoy the hell out of it while it's happening.
Right.
Because in the past, I'd make a record and be worried about what happens with it. And that just, that not only is it less fun, it kind of kills the vibe in the studio because you're not there. It's like you're not present.
Right,
So yeah, this time I was totally present and just like enjoying it while it was happening. And I think that's key. That's important. Cool. But yeah, realizing that that's my favorite time.
Yeah.
Is when it's being made in the studio, because, you know, after it's released and everything, it kind of belongs to everyone else at that point. It's not yours anymore.
What's the most important lesson you learned this time around making a record? What'd you pick up? So you've made a lot, right?
Yeah, I've made about 8 or 10 records, probably. Probably that I need a producer. Like, having Bobby, he's been like, I could never go back and try to produce my own record. I could produce other people's stuff, and I enjoy that, but not like producing my own stuff. It's like you're too close to it. You can't be.
Right.
You know, and now also I've learned how to really let people stretch out and do what they want to do. Because it's like you find people that you trust and then let them do their thing. I've learned that's been like really important.
Not micromanage.
And I used to do that. Like when I made my first record in Nashville, I had these like triple scale studio musicians like Shannon Forrest and Craig Young and Ray Kennedy produced it, and it was great, but I was so naive. I didn't know what the hell was going on, so I was like telling them like what to play.
Yeah.
And so it was like, looking back, it was kind of shameful, you know. But it worked out. It was good, you know. But it's still, it was a good record and everything, but it was just, I was like Sting, you know. And it's like, I'm not Sting. I'll never be Sting. But I, for some reason, thought I was at that. And now I'm like completely hands off. I've changed so much. Now I'm just like, yeah, it sounds like you just did it. Good. Let's move on.
Move on.
Like, it was easy. Excellent. It was just like, you know. And then they'd be like, well, let me do another pass. And okay, you know.
Yeah.
But it was just like, probably a lot of this the books I've been reading, like Taoism and stuff, is all about the flow and being like water and just letting it. And that's, and you know, kind of goes along with it. If you're lazy like I am, it's the Taoism kind of works.
Right. It's convenient.
Yeah. You're like, well, that would have happened anyway. Right. So I'll let it go. No, but there's that approach of just like, there's this book called The Tao of Leadership. That is a really good book, but it just takes like some of that ancient wisdom and puts it into a new perspective about like leadership and how that's really applicable like in the studio. Like, to be a leader is not to micromanage everybody,
but
it's actually to like encourage them to be at their best,
you know?
And and letting them make decisions,
them,
you know. So it's kind of counterintuitive. But it works, you know, just creating that environment where this is fun.
Right.
This isn't like a chore. Like, we're not going to do it 23 times or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we had some really good rehearsals, pre-production. You know, that's where the work was. And then when we were in the studio, it was just like, this is fun. You know, we might have done each song 4 or 5 times. But it was just like, okay, next.
That's it.
But yeah, it was the easiest record I've ever made. So we'll see how that fares.
See,
I don't know.
See,
it was easy.
Else
it was just like, oh, okay. Because a lot of the songs too are like 10 years old. You know, they're like older songs. I was just listening to something podcast with Chris Stapleton. He said his first record was like that. Actually, all these records that he's been doing have been catalog songs. He has like a catalog of 1,000 songs.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and they go through and listen. Oh, that one's kind of good, you know. And then they, you know, do pre-production, rehearse, and then rearrange probably things. But so that's what I kind of did for this. And my dad was helping me pick them out. So he's executive producer.
Yeah.
But he's also, you know, give him, he'll always give his opinion. That's for sure.
I'll let you know.
Yeah. I think I answered that last question.
No, that was good. That was good. Let's throw an easy one in there. Best piece of gear, music related, recent purchase.
Well, since I got my new publishing deal, well, it's not really new. I guess it's a year and a half old now, but this vintage.
Oh.
Martin, 00D. D0018, but yeah, it's my favorite guitar. But it just has this personality. When I played it alongside all kinds of other Gibsons,
yeah,
and this, I just kept coming back to it.
To it,
I was like, says that I'm a Martin guy now.
That, okay,
yeah, I figured that, like, out.
Convert.
Yeah, like 1961.
Wow.
Yeah. So the guitar is quite a bit older than I am. It wasn't cheap, but
I have no doubt.
It was kind of shocking to spend that much money on a guitar. Carter Vintage Guitars here in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just right. Just it was there. This the one, yeah.
Does it have like a story? Like, did someone famous own it?
It was a consignment deal, so someone, but they didn't say who it was. Didn't
say who it was.
I'm gonna just lie and say it was Vince Gill.
Okay.
I just watched the Vince Gill thing talking about his collection. He has some priceless shit in his collection.
In his guitar collection. Yeah.
But yeah, just there is something about if you're a guitar player.
Yeah.
And then a writer, it's like the guitar has songs in it. And I right away I could feel it. Like that one was like buzzing.
This is it.
It was like, yeah, and I've already written some cool ass songs with that guitar. And I used it on the new record. The other one is this guy I found on Craigslist. This is just a 2002 Gibson 333 semi-hollow body. There's solid wood in here. But it's like the kind of the... You know, Eric Clapton, George Harrison, B.B. King, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely a bluesy kind of vibe with that guitar. But those are my two babies, recent babies.
What's your holy grail guitar?
Like the ultimate? Like
no budget.
Price is not a...
No. No
not price. An issue.
It's just yours.
Like, what would I get?
Yeah.
Makes me nervous when you start getting too expensive, and it's like, then you're like...
No, just forget it.
No, just forget it. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I had to compromise a bit on the 333 because, you know, the guitar I really wanted was like the 1962 335 red, you know, like... But that 10 G's you're talking about.
Right.
So
right.
I guess I'd say that. But then my buddy has one, like a 1964 335 his dad gave him. See, it's like that's... My dad's kind of a dick because he never passed down any guitars. You know? It's like... But, I mean, come
on. You
got
an album, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sorry. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad. Yeah. I do appreciate it. I'd rather have the album, actually.
Because
it's going to take over Spotify.
That's right. Then you can get two.
Yeah.
335s.
I can get numerous.
A roomful.
Yeah, I can get that. I've considered in the past, like, wouldn't it be cool to have the big studio, you know, like Lincoln.
Right.
Lincoln Parrish has.
Yeah.
But then the more I, like, hung out with those guys and, like, had dabbled my own.
Yeah.
Like, that... That's a serious rabbit hole, man, that, like, you know, financially and then the upkeep and the...
Yeah.
Like, it's so much money just goes, just, you know, just keeping everything
up to date. And
like, I remember the first record I made when I moved here, Ray Kennedy was like, you know, he's great and he has all the best of everything. But, man, that dude was stressed out. You know what I mean? Just like, because it's just... that world is like, with computers too, with all the stuff, oh, it's obsolete, you know, we got to do the new,
you get a new computer operating system, run it,
yeah. And it's just like money, it just adds up. So I like what I have. It's like Project Studio, it's kind of lean and mean. I can do stuff really fast, and you know,
it sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, you've been on my podcast twice. What's one question you wanted me to ask you that I haven't asked you?
That's interesting. I thought that was your job.
I'm being lazy. Or what's something that you wish people would ask you that they don't?
I wish more people would ask about my shoes.
Really? You know,
like, where did you get those green shoes? Where did you get those sneakers?
Where did you get this?
It's too late now. I can't do it now.
What about the red Adidas you had last time I was here?
They're still my favorites.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I have the red Adidas. Although I might be graduating, you know.
From Adidas to...
Just, you know, you got to change it up.
You got to change it up
sometimes. You know, I rocked the red Adidas for a couple consecutive years. And I think, you know, it's like Jordan, you know.
You have to have a switch new...
Switch it up.
A new,
know,
shoe.
A new thing. Yeah. A new style. Straps or something.
Right. You know?
Maybe some Chukka boots.
Those are in.
Uggs.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Loper in some Uggs.
He has some.
Some big ass, like, furry Uggs. That'd be fucking awesome.
They're lined with his beard.
Just like the same fabric. That would be costly as hell. You know, where just do you time. Find that alpaca? What is it? What are those things called?
Alpacas?
Yeah, like it'd be an alpaca fur. Like, you'd have to find a red one.
The rare red
alpaca.
Alpaca.
I think that's the word. Alpaca?
Yeah. No, that's it.
It's a good reference. Good fodder. Thanks for being here, sitting here.
Yeah.
Loper. He's pissed.
Nah, it's fine.
Yeah. I don't think I really answered your question. Well, the shoes.
That's fine. I won't ask about them this time. But next time, it's the first question.
It's a kind of a big, important part of my wardrobe. It's always been a sneaker guy. You're a sneaker guy, right? You got...
Yeah, yeah.
You got the Chuck Taylors.
Yeah.
Red.
Yeah. I just ordered some Stan Smith Adidas. Mm. Like, all white.
Okay.
Like, old school.
I never feel like I can do the white shoe. Yeah, I have confidence to rock the white.
Well, the problem is it's like the studio. It's a maintenance thing. Because you can't wear them out all...
Right,
you know, right. Dirtied up. You got to clean them.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Grateful Dead series on Amazon?
Yeah, I liked it.
I liked it too.
I saw it in the theater, and my buddy who gave me the records is like a total deadhead. Like, okay. He followed him for years. He has like one giant silver dread.
Really?
Yeah, he's like in his 50s. But I invited him down, you know, to come see it. Because he's always broke.
Yeah.
He, like, sells pot occasionally. And teaches yoga, like, one time a week. That's, like, his life.
Yeah.
But he's just a weird dude. He's great. He's great, like, podcast kind of material. Because he's just got stories. And fucking. I think he told me he did acid every day for 5 years.
That sounds like a dude that needs to be on a podcast.
Yeah, he's out there. But he came to the... show, met me, I bought him a ticket, and he's like, yeah, I dropped a little acid before, you know, so he dropped a little acid.
He was ready.
Yeah, he was
came
ready.
Prepared.
Yeah. But it was like three hours, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was good. I thought it was good. I mean, it was kind of sad, but that's Jerry.
Right.
He's a blues man.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I took from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that stuff about the woman that would have been his wife, kind of. That whole story, that was kind of like, yeah, that was kind of sad. But he had, you know, he had to follow the band.
Right. He did it for the people.
He did it for the people, for the he's a blues man, you know, what can you say? But it was good, it was well done.
I was going to ask you about Bob Weir recording The Air in L.A. when they made the first record for Warner Brothers. Was there any expense that anything you wanted in your last record, production-wise, that you couldn't get?
Yeah, that's an actually kind of an embarrassing story that I should probably share.
Okay.
But it hurts.
I didn't mean for it to
No, you know, this is bound to come up.
Okay.
I wanted a horn section on a song, you know?
Okay.
And there was this dude that I was, like, stalking. His name's Roy Agee. He's, like, he played with Prince and stuff. He plays trombone. And I was like, ooh, wouldn't that be cool to get Roy Agee? Ooh. And I got all my hopes up and, like, talked to him, and he was receptive, and he totally blew me off.
Really?
Yeah. So that kind of broke my heart. And then we were going to get some other people to do some horns on it, and they were kind of like... So I just think, you know, the Taoist in me is like, no horns.
No horns. There you go.
You know? But, yeah, it was like Roy Agee, you know? Like, he just... He couldn't be honest when I first approached him. You know? You know, that's hard.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, of
course. He couldn't be like, hey, man, I'm not really feeling it. Like, and then I would have been like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, or at least that's in my dream, in my head.
He wanted to let you down easy.
Yeah, instead he was like, Memphis horns.
Right.
All right. You know, and then like a week later, like crickets, nothing. I'm like, thanks, Roy.
Got busy.
Yeah, he did say sorry. It was just like, sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry I couldn't be like honest.
When we did Matt's record, Bobby Keys' name got tossed out at one point.
Yeah, we're
like, let's go get Bobby Keys. Nice.
No, I mean, those are like, I was just into it too, because you get those guys in the studio and like you just absorb some of their energy and that their stories, and this guy's a real big personality.
Yeah.
And a big, he's crazy. Yeah. And that's the kind of people that I like.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Just crazy, like Bobby Keys. Like that would be crazy to work with that guy. Just the stories that guy has.
Well, I'm like pretty much out of questions. So thanks again.
Thank you, Alan. It's good to see you.